This is Dak Prescott, and you're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome to Faith on the Field Show, presented by International Justice Mission. I am Rob Motti with my beautiful wife, Remy. It is great to be with you again this week. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are, whether you're listening in L.A., Vegas, Orlando, Charlotte, Atlanta, Philadelphia, on a podcast, on a website. Thank you and appreciate it. Special guest this week is Duke Preston. Duke played four seasons with the Buffalo Bills, and he's now in the role of Director of Player Engagement for the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So stay tuned for that conversation. But in the interview, Duke talks about, there's a line in there that he says, the pleasures of this world don't satisfy. And he says, you can win the Super Bowl, and then the next day or the same day you go home and still got to make lunch for your kids, still got to get up. Like, nothing changes. So there's so many pleasures in this world, but they don't satisfy. And I was reading in 1 John 2, 15-17, and this verse always, it hits home, it hits hard. And the verse reads, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. It's important to note that when John's talking about the world here, he doesn't mean the world. He's talking about the spiritual, this invisible spiritual system of Satan, of the enemy, that is completely opposed to the will of God. And the world in the Bible is what is the enemy's system for opposing the work of Christ here on earth. The enemy uses so many tricks. You know that. So many tricks.
Absolutely.
He attempts to, we're naive sometimes, mm-hmm. We're sometimes numb to the fact that he's trying to trick us, and he finds a way to deceive, and he finds a way to show us how the pleasures of the world, the pleasures of fame, the pleasures of glory, the pleasures of financial success, of wealth, of popularity, of acceptance, how all of these pleasures can sometimes pollute our mind and distract us from what's important, what's the will of the Father. And right now we're living in a world where everybody wants to be accepted. I think sometimes we see the church and Christians get caught up in, well, I don't want to be a troublemaker. I don't want to oppose the trends, and I don't want to oppose what everyone is doing and what everyone is talking about, and I'll just go along with it. And I think we get caught up in too often in acceptance. And we got to really recognize, take a step back and see that John's warning us in this Bible verse that there's incredible danger that we put ourselves in every day when we live for the world and its pleasures. And It's tempting, right? It's tempting. We all want to see our happiness interpreted differently and through the eyes of what others see as success and happiness and joy. But if we realize that our peace and our joy comes in Christ, everything else that the enemy's trying to tempt us with, we can overcome that. And I think he tries the same thing over and over again that he tried way back.
Yeah,
way back with Adam and Eve.
Right.
And there's the temptation of flesh. There's the lust of the eyes, the pride in our lifestyle, and all of those things. He just keeps using it over and over and over
and
again.
It's the same thing. It's like the shiny shiny object syndrome. You know.
I like how you put it. I'm gonna call this episode the shiny object syndrome.
It really is, I sometimes fall for it because and it doesn't even have to be shiny and beautiful. It's the same tactic over and over. And you know what's funny though, like, because I fall in that trap sometimes. I get like bugged down, and you know that I get bugged down with like things. Like if there's something that needs to happen and it's like a big thing, it's all I think about, it is all I dream about, it is all I consume all day long. It consumes me because I'm
one
of
your
those
face
people,
it's on your mind.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that I guess I'm like a project oriented person like things have to go in order for me. Like I cannot move along. It's like the weirdest thing ever. Like this is what I have to do. So it needs to be done for me to move forward to like anything else in life. Like it's the weirdest thing. Like this has to be done for me to move forward to the next thing. Even though like there's a million things that need to be done during that time frame, I still cannot do it till that thing is over.
you freeze everything. You put it on hold.
It's the weirdest thing.
I get that. Then I see that.
The problem with that, though, is that you don't leave it in God's hands. Mm. And that's a problem because during this like past month, he kept reminding me like, stop holding on. It's in my hands. Stop holding. Like, stop with your grip. Yeah. Your grip is too tight. You know when like a little baby grips like the food? In front of you, and you're like trying to get the food out of their hands, like that grip. It's that tight, you know. Like you cannot get the food out of their hands. Done. It's over.
Oh, you got to tell the story of Melina as a little girl. Oh my goodness!
She was a little girl. She sits on my lap. I'm eating, and then this girl's quick. She would be like, boom, and she would grab the little like piece of chicken and puts it in her mouth. I'm like, dude, you cannot eat this big piece of chicken yet. You're like a year old, so chill out. But that's the same grip I have with things. Like I just grab on.
I thought you were going to go with the strawberry story.
And the strawberry
story. When she was old enough to eat the strawberries, she would be eating with one hand, and in the other hand, she'd be clutching this strawberry.
Yes.
Hanging on to it for dear life because she doesn't want to lose it. Yeah. She's like, I got to, like literally, this
juices
would be like.
Juices are dripping and everything.
A year and a half old, maybe, right? Whenever they start, I don't know when you were giving them, they were eating very early. Like, so she might have been just a year. But she'd be eating with one hand and just squeezing the life out of this strawberry. with the other hand. And by the time she's done eating, she can't even eat this last one that was in her hand because she squeezed the life out of it.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
And that's, I think, what we do when we don't put our life in his grip and we put it in our own.
Yeah, and you feel like, but I can't let this go. Like, I have to do something about it. And he's like, but I got it. Like, I got it. I just need you to be patient. And I don't know when I'm going to pass this test, y'all, because I feel like he's like, okay, you failed again.
It's not an easy test.
So I think I'm going to have to go through the test again because once again, I failed. But I try and I try and try. And I'm a control freak. It's one of those things he needs to continue to work on with me because it's so difficult to just let go, and it's so difficult to just say like, okay, it's okay, everything's gonna be all right.
Let go and let God is so much easier to hashtag. It's so much easier to just say.
Oh, I hashtag it all the time, right? But
somebody,
I don't do
somebody's
it.
Going through something. Oh, just let go and let God.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's not that easy. It's not that easy. We want to. We're trying to, and we hope we can. And we kind of veered a little bit off of the love of the world here, right? And
but
took
it's
it
the same thing.
Taking control of our own.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah, because when John's talking about loving the world, I love how if anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in him. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to what I said at the top. The world is the enemy. The world is what he wants us to
focus our
eyes on.
And it's also the things that we want to happen in the world.
Or the shiny object syndrome, as you're talking about. When we love that, then we're not focused on the Father. Our focus and our eyes are not on him. And he's so good at distracting us. The enemy is so good at taking us off of what we should be focused on and letting us get all caught up in everything else that's going on in the world and all the issues and the drama and the daily, what's today's topic on the news and what are we going to, this COVID-19 was such a big distraction for all of us.
I wonder what people are going to talk about now. I'm sorry, I shouldn't. But seriously though, lately, I don't really understand, but anyways.
there's so many distractions. There's so many different things, and it's not to say that that is a made up thing. It was real. We went through
no,
it.
No, I mean, like
we're not coming
about.
Yeah,
it, like,
we're coming out of it. But it was that was all that was talked about on the news. Right. There was so much else going on, but that was it. It was all focused on that.
Right.
But remember, if we love the world and the things of the world, we're not focused on the Father. And as you'll hear coming up from Duke Preston, the pleasures of this world don't satisfy. Up next, you'll hear from former Buffalo Bills center Duke Preston. You're listening to Faith on a Field Show presented by International Justice Mission with Rob and Remy Mahdi.
Today, over 40 million people are being forced into trafficking and slavery. One in four are children. We cannot allow them to suffer in silence. We need you. We need everybody. Go to IJM.org/take action. Get information. Understand how you can be involved. Because of the work that you are committing to do, they will be free.
Karen University is a biblical university located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. With NCAA Division III athletics, a strong commitment to the arts, and majors in over 40 professional and academic fields, Karen prepares students to serve Christ as biblically minded, well-educated, and professionally competent men and women of character. Learn more at karen.edu.
Since 1930, the Heritage family has proudly served the communities of South Jersey. From humble roots, Heritage's Dairy Stores now operates 33 convenient locations. Their desire is to become your convenience store of choice, not just because of their welcoming atmosphere, but because of their fresh, quality products. Heritage's milk is still the sweetest, coffee's hot and fresh, and Heritage's full-service delis offer the best local ingredients prepared and sliced on-site, far exceeding the competition. Heritage's Dairy Stores, it's not just our name, it's our heritage.
This is JT Romito, and you're listening to the Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome back to Faith on a Field Show, presented by International Justice Mission. I'm Rob Mahdi with Remy. If you're listening to us for the first time, you can go to faithonafieldshow.com. Find every episode since we launched in 2017. We've had an awesome lineup of guests, and you can listen anytime at your convenience. On any of the podcast platforms, you'll hear the full interviews on there. Be sure also to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Faith on the Field, and tell a friend about the show. I want to take a minute to thank all of our wonderful sponsors. Please check them out on our website, International Justice Mission, and the incredible work that they do. Go to IJM.org, Karen University, Heritage's Dairy Stores, Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates. Thank you to all of them. If you would like to be a sponsor for our show and help our ministry grow, please reach out to us at team@faithonafieldshow.com. We have various packages we can cater specifically to fit your needs. Our goal is to be on a sports radio station in every state. So if you don't have a business to advertise on but want to help the ministry, we have a donate button on our page on faithonafieldshow.com. You can also help out by purchasing some of our merch through Remy's 828 Threads Apparel store. We have t-shirts and so much more. Check it out. Really cool stuff. You can find it on our site, faithonafieldshow.com, under merch. Our guest this week is Duke Preston. Duke played four seasons with the Buffalo Bills from 2005 to 2008. His dad, Ray Preston, spent nine seasons with the Chargers. Duke is now with the Buccaneers in a very important role as Director of Player Engagement. Here is my conversation with Duke Preston, presented by International Justice Mission.
Duke, tell me about your role as the Director of Player Engagement for the Super Bowl champion now, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, thanks, man. No, it was a fun year, and we're looking forward to seeing what we can do coming back with all the tools and toys that we got coming back. No, so my role with the Bucs, I mean, I feel like my position exists to help our guys, you know, first and foremost, navigate life. I think the professional football realm and the challenges that brings are unique. It's a space where I have the privilege of serving these guys and serving them without really, I don't want anything in return, right? So they have very few, I think, relationships where people are there just for them without something coming back in exchange for that person's service. But myself and my coordinator, Justice Jones, we have the privilege of just kind of helping these guys stay on the rails and keep their heads about them and hopefully walk away from the game a whole man instead of a broken one. And then as it pertains to the football side of it, hopefully I think we have been pretty successful in helping our guys become true pros sooner than they would on their own, you know, helping giving them some tools to implement into their games, helping to help decodify some of the mysteries of the NFL and maximize, you know, who God made them. So
how did you see the culture change upon Tom Brady's arrival last year, long before you win the Super Bowl, just as he comes in? How did you see that changing the culture of the team?
Yeah, I mean, Tom was a huge part in that side of it, right? I mean, I talk to our guys a lot about, on a personal scale, them having a transcendent why, something that drives them and moves them regardless of their circumstances, and so that they know why they're there and why they show up every day. But then I think the second core principle of a team that is really capable of achieving a championship like we did, is that they would have what I call expectant belief, right? It's not enough just to believe, but to have this anticipatory belief, knowing that something is going to happen, I think is a huge part of the success of business, the success of, you know, relationships, the success of a championship football team. And Tom brought that in spades. I think his ability to step on the field and coach, the way that he would demand excellence from the guys, especially when we were between the white lines, you know, even stuff that I wasn't privy to, like he would send texts to guys the night before games or just randomly in the middle of the night saying, "Hey man, I can't wait to hit you on this route to score a touchdown on Sunday." And all that stuff does is just fuel belief that it can happen. I mean, why not us? But I think sometimes teams get stuck in a lack of evidence. And, you know, Tom having six Super Bowls before he got here and then, you know, getting his seventh, he brought that in a huge way for us.
Your dad played 9 years with the Chargers. You played and you were a starter for the Buffalo Bills. Duke, how much does that experience help you relate to the guys in your role now?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I was 3 years old when my dad retired, and I spent the majority of my childhood, you know, obviously with a guy who was a retired player. So I thought the world of him. You know, he was always my hero, and I would stand out on the corner and of my neighborhood, and I would pass out, you know, his old football cards and autographs and stuff. And you know, I would do that when I was 5 and 6 years old. But I also saw some of the struggles that we went through, you know, financially and otherwise with him trying to figure out what to do next. You know, I think what happens for NFL ball players by no fault of their own is that whenever they exit the game, and my dad was 9 years, they're that far removed from their peer group in achieving a successful career in something else. So having to start over and be 31 years old, learning a new skill, learning a new trade is difficult. You know, I think the other piece that I really learned from my dad is how much the athletic identity gets wrapped up into who you are, right? To where my dad, he would come visit me when I was in college and when I was in the pros, and he'd be, you know, 50 something years old and ask, "Man, I would love to go down and cover a kick." I'm like, "Dad, those days are done, man. Like, you can't do it anymore." But in his mind, he really could, you know? And so I think understanding that it becomes part of us, but then for all the struggles that I saw my dad and my family go through as a kid, I watched my dad work his absolute tail off to keep us afloat. You know, like his resiliency and his work ethic that made him a great football player, you know, made him a great dad, a great father, a great husband. And to watch him grind through some of the stuff that he did to provide for us, you know, was humbling. But it's also some of the things that I take to my craft now with our guys and helping them understand the transferable skills that they have as ball players, and that being a true professional in this environment is no different than being a true professional in any other environment. In fact, I think it makes these guys even more capable and adept at rising above their peers when the day comes to exit the game, should they just be humble enough to kind of take the time to learn what they need to do and do it really well.
Well said. I had an opportunity to listen into the rookie webinar, and players coming into the league, they understandably have so many different questions. Duke, what do you consider the toughest challenges for these guys as they transition from maybe being the big man on campus in college to being one of the guys in the league?
Yeah, one of the things that I think I've seen with young guys in particular is a reluctance to be brutally honest with themselves, right? I mean, I think we live in a day where, you know, in our personal lives and families, we take 15 pictures and then we pick out our favorite one and then we scrub it and we fix it. And we get to, you know, we get to kind of promote and put out for public consumption our ideal self. And so, you know, when guys now have done that for their entire, you know, young adult lives, they get here and then they have a coach that's telling them that, look, this is wrong. This isn't, you're not doing it well. I mean, and you're definitely not doing as well as these guys who have been here for 5-6 years. I think for some young guys, it's hard for them to take that on the chin and not feel like it's a personal attack, when really it's just about the what's necessary to be successful in this game. So, you know, the guys that have been the best at assimilating themselves into the NFL are guys that can be truly humble and take coaching without letting it affect their confidence or their person. Right. So I think there's those challenges on the field. And then obviously there's, you know, money and finances and family and, you know, things that are coming at them from every angle. So sometimes it becomes a perfect storm. I think what I try to do is make sure that the player themselves doesn't become their own worst enemy. You know, if there's going to be hard things that come at them, let it be how difficult the game is and things that are outside of their control. And if we can help them, you know, be an advocate for themselves and their best self, then we've done a decent job in the player engagement world.
You mentioned family and money. I know one of the questions that several players were asking during the webinar is, how do you deal with family asking for money? What is the best approach that you recommend, Duke?
Yeah. Sometimes it's, you got to just get good at saying no. You know, I mean, we all have our stories. Shoot, I have my own. There's people that I just had to cut off. You know, some people that they start kind of a slow game and easing their way in, but you know, they have an agenda on the back end. And once that becomes clear, I think it's okay to sever some ties, and it gets hard with family for sure. But I've always been one where I try to help our guys understand that, you know, they didn't ask to be born to the parents that they were born to when they were born. They didn't ask to be 3 years old and needing clothes and those kind of things. And so the idea that, you know, someone would need a $50,000 kickback for raising them is an unfounded one, in my opinion. So, you know, I think a lot of guys end up having a no person early on, which I think is a helpful tool. But ultimately, they need to be able to speak for themselves and advocate for themselves to where they can, in some respects, explain to certain people that, hey, look, this money isn't going to last forever if I'm giving out pieces of it everywhere. And help that other person figure out the best way for them to get what they need that's not over leveraging a player that really can't afford it. So
at one point you told the guys to background check anyone that works for them, because it is a free resource through the NFL security. How important is it to emphasize that resource is one that they should definitely take advantage of?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, not everything shows up in a background check, but mm-hmm. To do your due diligence and realize that the people that you're hiring now are your employees. Look, it's a huge paradigm shift for college football players. When they go to college, they're told what to do in so many aspects of their lives. They have to check with their athletic departments if X, Y, and Z is okay, or if it breaks a compliance rule or things along those lines. And then they go right from there to having an agent. And then they look at their agent almost, because the agent tells them, here, you're going to train here, you should do this, you should do that. And it's a hard shift for young players to come to grips with, that the agent, when they pay them 3%, that's their employee. Their financial advisor, when they pay them a 1% management fee or a per transaction fee, that's their employee. A manager, same thing, that's their employee. So they're used to being told what to do instead of laying out expectations for the team of people around them. And so I think one of the things that I try to help our guys understand is, you know, that it is a different paradigm that they're stepping into, where they now are professionals that have a team around them, a team of employees that they need to help, set expectations and cast a clear vision for, and that all that stuff kind of takes time. But, you know, you can't do it if there's no plan in sight to try to execute that.
Some of the rookies were asking about how to handle if a veteran player isn't forthcoming with information or isn't just being helpful. And mm-hmm. I know there's plenty of older guys who pass along the wisdom that they've gained over the years, but I'm sure there's going to be instances where veterans feel threatened or resentful that a young player is going to take their job. How do you think is best to navigate that?
Yeah, I always tell our young guys, you know, don't stand too far back. You know, breathe down the neck of these older guys. I mean, it's a competitive environment, and it's a competition-driven league where it ought to be truly merit-based. The best guy ought to be the guy who plays. And I think I'm fortunate to be on a team and in an environment where our head coach, even over rookie minicamp, said, look, I don't care where you came from. I don't care if you were the first round pick or the last undrafted free agent that we signed. If you can play, I want you. And if you can't, we're going to get you out of the building. And he's proven that. He's done that with the transactions that we've had. Even Jason Light, our GM, especially Jason Light, our GM, he's not one where we will draft guys and keep them just because we drafted them. If they come out on the grass and they're not as good as the other guys, he's going to cut them. And he doesn't care if that, you know, makes his process look, like it's not effective. I mean, I think the idea is to set up a championship caliber team, and that's what we have. So when it comes to young guys dealing with veterans, you know, I always encourage our guys to not take a backseat, to keep fighting for it. And that if a guy isn't forthcoming, it probably says something about how they feel about, you know, where they stand, and less about what it is. So it ought to embolden them. It ought to encourage them, knowing that, if they're not seen as a threat, you know, shoot, why wouldn't I help you? But if you're a threat, I may not give the same kind of advice, and that's on them. So, you know, for our young guys, realizing that it's not personal, they're there to earn a job and fulfill their dreams and help our team move itself forward. You know, you handle it kind of as it comes.
Do you find that the advice, the challenges are different for a first round pick versus a late round pick versus an undrafted free agent? And you really have to cater what you're saying to each individual and their needs and what they're going through.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, our first round picks, there's a different level of stress and pressure that those guys are under. And then the undrafted guys, you know, the 55th man on the roster, who's on the outside looking in, there's a different level of stress and strain on those guys. I think one of the things I've learned, even in my time no longer being a player, is, you know, when you're in college and you're the guy, you're really unchallenged. I mean, when I was at Illinois and you know, when I was going into my fifth year and had started for 2 years in a row, I mean, the only thing that was going to knock me out was an injury. So I got to relax and kind of settle in and push myself and play the best football that I could play. But I was able to do it from a relaxed position of not being threatened or challenged. And so I think a lot of guys spend the early part of their NFL career trying to recapture that. And the problem is, it doesn't exist in the NFL. If you're Vita Vea and you're a first round pick, and then all of a sudden you have an injury, or Devin White, who goes down his rookie year with a soft tissue injury and misses 3 weeks, you feel the pressure of not being out on the field. If you're Mike Evans and you have an $80 million deal and you only have, you know, two touchdown catches over the first 6 weeks of the season, you feel the pressure of not performing and not being the guy. And that's no different than the guy who, you know, gets activated from the practice squad only to get cut the next day. Everyone has that level of pressure and expectation on them. So the sooner that you get used to just owning that and realizing that it's not going anywhere, the faster you can figure out ways to deal with it.
Duke, how have you seen AB, Antonio, grow and mature? It seems from the outside looking in, just following him a little bit on social media and being around the team for the Super Bowl, that he's grown, he's developed a little bit. How have you seen it?
Yeah, me and AB have had a fun opportunity to get to know each other. So when he first got here, he wasn't allowed to work out with any of the coaches. I can't remember if it was the terms of his, you know, suspension or whatever it was, but he couldn't get on the field with the coaching staff, and he couldn't get on the field with the players, but he was allowed to work out in the building. And so he needed someone to throw to him. And I was a catcher in high school and a pretty decent pitcher in Little League and stuff. And so I can throw a football. And so he had me out there. I was throwing routes with him. And the first play drive, you know, I think he ran, you know, five routes, and I was two out of five throwing good balls. So like bad ball, good ball. And then a terrible ball to end the play drive. And he was like, man, this quarterback, you're killing me. And I was like, man, shut up, get on the line, you know? So,
I mean, he knew you played offensive line, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter in this environment, man. If you say you could do something, you better go do it. So no, but that was the beginning of my relationship with him, and I got to throw to him for the first 2 weeks. I think I still have a problem with my right elbow because of it, but I think having the opportunity to just get to know him and hear his story, right? I think that's been my approach with our guys. Is, you know, when you serve their felt needs, and for him it was needing someone to throw to him, and you can come through with some of the felt needs, then over time, you know, they'll come back and look for more help in those areas that they either maybe don't want to address or that have gone unaddressed for a while. So, you know, it was to see him be the kind of pro that he was here. You know, I'm always one, I use this a lot with my kids, like, and I challenge parents with this all the time. Like, are you as direct with your praise as you are with your criticism? And so when I see guys that are doing things the right way, I make it a point to encourage them in doing what they're doing. And AB is a guy who, you know, came in, was caught, you know, shut his mouth, worked, did exactly what he was supposed to do. He's not going to stop wanting the ball. You know, I mean, that's a great competitive trait that he has. But he does everything that he was asked to do. And what it ended up yielding him was another opportunity to come back and do what he does. So, yeah, to see him take that and move past maybe some of the stuff that's taken place for him in the past was really encouraging.
After you retired from the NFL, you earned a master's degree in Christian education. I know you spent a few years working for FCA. I've done several different events with them. You're a man of strong faith, Duke. So how has that helped you throughout your journey and through to what you're doing now?
Yeah, so, I mean, I talked about like a transcendent why, and, you know, it's personal for me in that I feel like God put me on this earth to be a conduit of truth and a servant of men, right? And that's no matter what I'm doing, working here in the NFL, working at a high school, you know, serving my kids, coming alongside my fiance to work through life. I mean, I exist to serve others. And I think I really enjoy that. My cup is filled up from doing that. And like I mentioned about serving the felt needs to look for opportunities to satisfy others, our guys have a lot of felt needs coming into the NFL. But ultimately, I think they have a need in their heart for a savior and for life that's meant to be lived abundantly like Christ has given us the instruction to do so in his word. So, you know, I feel like if I can help serve what they need, and then help us get to that pinnacle of success like we have, it's funny that the world is set up and even the pleasures of this world don't satisfy. So you get to a championship and it's awesome. And then the next day you're still making lunches. You're still yelling at your kids. You still have the same, you know, problems. It doesn't solve anything ultimately. So for me to be able to facilitate both, where we get to win Super Bowls and then hopefully we get to see the beauty that's there in and through the forgiveness of Christ. That's the plan.
I spoke to Clyde at the Super Bowl, Clyde Christensen, and he said Bruce Arians had put him into the role of team chaplain last year because to limit how many people come into the building. And I could certainly see you in also side by side in that kind of role, influence and guiding these guys toward a relationship with Christ. And I really appreciate that about you. And thank you so much, Duke, man, for your time.
Yeah, thank you, man.
That was former Buffalo Bills center and current Tampa Bay Buccaneers director of player engagement, Duke Preston. Thank you to Duke for joining us this week. Thank you to Doug, Pastor Scott, Josh, and everyone on our Faith on a Field team. And thank you for listening to Faith on a Field show presented by International Justice Mission. With Remy, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference. Be a blessing.
Today, over 40 million people are being forced into trafficking and slavery. One in four are children. We cannot allow them to suffer in silence. We need you. We need everybody. Go to ijm.org/take action. Get information. Understand how you can be involved. Because of the work that you are committing to do, they will be free.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Karen University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Karen is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Karen is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at karen.edu/visit.
Did you know creating your legacy documents, will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive, etc. is important because it allows you to have control over how your estate will be distributed upon your passing? You also get to decide who will make decisions, both financial and medical, if you are incapacitated and unable to make them for yourself. It allows a trusted family member or friend to become the decision maker. Without these documents, these types of decisions will be determined by a court based upon state laws that may or may not be in order with your desires and intentions. I have two daughters and realized they could be in trouble if something happened to my wife and I. Thank goodness for Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates, because now Remy and I have our estate planning documents in place to protect our family, which is even more important during these challenging times. Make your appointment with Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates at 856-428-2266. Like I did, to get the peace of mind that estate planning can bring. That's 856-428-2266.
With 33 convenient locations, Heritage's Dairy Stores desires to be your deli of choice. Heritage's full-service delis offer great-tasting products for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Hairy Egg Breakfast Sandwich, made with two farm-fresh eggs, cheese, choice meat on a fresh Kaiser roll, makes mornings simple. Heritage's famous subs are built on freshly baked Lissio rolls and feature Dietz and Watson premium meats and cheeses, freshly sliced anytime. Making lunches at home? Try one of our lunchbox specials, which are sure to please. Heritage's Dairy Stores, our family, your hometown deli.
We have operations all over the world, rescuing people from slavery. Because today there are criminals who abuse children, sell girls.
How old is she? 12.
12?
How much?
30.
Yeah, I'm afraid.
And force families into slavery. Criminals prey on the easiest target, the world's poor, because they expect no one to defend them.
Pareho po tayong mga tao. Hindi po tayo ibagay or hayo na pwedeng gamitin lang sa pansarili.
But today, there are thousands of people gathering to seek justice for those in slavery. We are a group of lawyers, counselors, activists, and supporters. We are called International Justice Mission. And together, we form the largest international anti-slavery organization in the world. But slavery won't come to an end until criminals know they can't get away with it. So we partner with local police to arrest and prosecute criminals. This sends a message to slave owners. We will not go away. We stay with the survivors until they are healed, until they are free.
Natulungan po ako ng IJM sa pamamagitan po na sa case ko, sa pagtulong po nila na ma-overcome ko po yung fear.
Each year, we rescue thousands of slaves and protect millions around the world. We are transforming how justice systems protect their citizens. To those who are still enslaved, we promise to find you. We will get you home to your families so you can have the freedom you deserve.